Hello, my name is Carol Mae Wittick and welcome to Her Conversations, Tools for the Awakening Woman. HER is an acronym for Higher Energetic Resonance. This is the optimal state to embody in order to attract our highest desires. So who is the Awakening Woman? She's a woman who's seeking a greater possibility in a reality and she's looking for solutions. She knows being awakened is not a lofty ideal, but a necessity. If she can transform herself, she can change the world. Her conversations will introduce you to talented women who will speak to your spirituality, sensuality, and soul. They'll share their stories and explain how they are in service to the world. So let their words and these conversations embolden and inspire you. If you have any level of curiosity about astrology, then this episode is definitely the one for you. Like most people, I became aware of basic astrology by reading horoscopes in the mainstream media. These were the things that promised to interpret what was written in the stars for us. However, that stuff is so vague and so diluted, it's easy to see why there's a general disbelief around the accuracy of information that it can provide. Personally now, as I begin to uncover the true depths, I appreciate that it's a tool and an art form. When you speak to a true astrologer, they're able to offer you insights and guide you on ways to ride the subtle energies that we're constantly moving through. This week's guest on Her Conversations is astrologer Christina Wingeyer, and on this episode she explains the basics of astrology. She highlights the aspects of our signs that we need to know. She speaks on the stereotypes of the zodiac, guides us on what we can do to work with the changes in the moon, and also tells us what it means when Mercury is in retrograde and whether we really need to freak out about it. So like always, I greet my guests with the opening question. HER is an acronym for Higher Energetic Resonance. When do you feel at your most HER?
Thank you, Carol Mae, for having me here. Such a beautiful acronym, really, Higher Energetic Resonance. So when I get out of my own way, mostly I feel HER when I'm working with clients, when I've taken the time to clear myself and tune in and show up in service. Then I feel that I am HER. You know, it's not about me, it's about holding a space and showing up and, you know, for the energy that's present in a higher vibrational way without being afraid to work with whatever energy somebody's bringing, because sometimes that energy is darker or harder or more traumatic. And to be able to hold that space to help my clients is one of the ways that I feel that that is alive in me. And then really in nature is when I get a lot of, I feel like, tune-ups and connecting to that energy of higher energetic resonance. And that carries me a long way, just being filled by the mother in so many ways in nature is really when I feel very, very connected and all just tuned up and lined up with that.
Perfect. Thank you. And I just want to find out a little bit more of your story. What has led you, how's your path brought you to what you're doing today?
So for a long time, I was a birth worker. For like 10, 15 years, I was a doula and trained as a midwife. And that happened after I had my own daughter and my own home birth. And that kind of just like revolutionized me and got me really interested in women's health. And so for many, many years, that's what I did. I was a mom. I was immersed in babies and moms and birth and postpartum. And that was my whole identity as in a profession was I'm going to be a midwife. I'm training as a midwife. And what happened along the way as I was doing my midwifery training is I entered into perimenopause on the early side. And my body started throwing out all these crazy symptoms. And it became really clear that living an on-call lifestyle was not going to be possible. I couldn't lose sleep in that way anymore. And so I had to step away from the work that I was doing and this identity that I was so connected to and try to find another way to use all the things that I brought to my midwifery and my doula practice, all the different healing tools. So I finally was able to quit, which threw me into a pretty deep depression and a dark night of the soul. And it took me about a year to bring it kind of all back together and start to offer an intuitive healing practice and use the same energetic skill set with women in a whole new way, you know, and still being a midwife in one that's a space holder and allowing, you know, holding the space for transformation to occur, because that's really what midwifery is at the core. As far as astrology, I've been studying astrology almost, I feel like, my whole life, just kind of something I've been into. And when I lost my cycle, I've been into the moon forever. I've had a lunar calendar since I was 20 years old and been tracking the moon, but I really started tuning into the moon and the phases of the moon and that rhythm when my menstrual cycle was going haywire, because I needed something I could anchor into. And so the moon became a very big teacher for me. And as I tuned deeper into her rhythms, and I found myself just being more and more attuned to kind of cosmic rhythms, and astrology just started coming more and more and more downloads and more easily for me to share. And last year at some point, I just got a clear directive to start working more directly with astrology with clients. So I've been weaving that in ever since, and it's wonderful. I love it so much.
And that's perfect. And as you were talking about aligning yourself and understanding the cycle of the moon as well, because there's more, I think, maybe because I'm more aware of it, but there's more when there's a full moon, when there's a new moon, you see more reference to the fact that these moons, or the moon is in this particular state, and things to do like set intentions or manifestation. What is it about those particular energies that are so specific, and why should we kind of start to really align ourselves with those rhythms as opposed to the rhythms that we've been used to, like Monday to Friday, like the first till the end of the month and so forth?
Right. Well, the calendar year is a construction that was made very intentionally without really paying attention to the lunar rhythm. That's an older rhythm. The lunar cycle is an older cycle that we're already attuned to as humans, because, you know, for so long, I mean, there was no light at night. The moon was the only light, and the stars, of course. But we were very attuned to it in a very bones, blood kind of way, and especially as women, because we cycle. We have cycles, and, you know, whether we're menstruating or not anymore, we have energetic cycles, hormonal cycles, and that we can really connect with the moon, and the moon really reflects back to us our own rhythmic nature. And so the lunar cycle is just, it's a very doable cycle to track your own patterns with. You know, the new moon is a time when the moon is connected with the sun. You can't see the moon at a new moon. She's dark for us, and it's this time of new beginnings, right? And then slowly she's getting a little more light every day until she's full. So that first half of the cycle is really a building cycle, a starting and building and growth cycle, bringing more light in. And then when the moon is full, we have that peak moment of fullness when all the light is there and there's something illuminated, right? Something is revealed. And then the moon starts releasing her light and releasing her energy, and it's time to start releasing, start sharing or letting go. So the last half of the cycle is that letting go and releasing and decluttering and clearing kind of energy, so that, you know, what you've learned, you learn something about yourself all the time. But with the lunar cycle, you can really, you know, if you're tracking intentionally, you're learning and you get this awareness, you're like, okay, now I know what I need to let go of, so that I can start again, start anew. Because we're always kind of, not that we're ever brand new, we always bring our life experiences with us, but we're in growth, you know, we're in ebb and flow. And so the lunar cycle is a great tool and teacher to help us, I feel.
And are there particular practices that you think that would really help us to maximize those states of the moon? So what can we do when the moon is full? What can we really do when the moon is new to really just move with those?
Well, I think first of all, like, totally honor how you're feeling, because I do think that sometimes there's a little bit of a prescriptive kind of energy that goes out, like, you need to do this on the new moon, and if you're not, and I don't like that. I like to, like, have the freedom to do what feels right to me. So listening to your body, because the moon is really connected to your body in astrology. So really tuning into your body and allowing yourself to follow its needs. But in general, new moon is a time to plant seeds in the dark and to set out hopes and prayers and intentions for the lunar cycle. you can tune in to the sign that the moon is new in, the zodiac sign, and you can kind of get a feel for the energetic quality. Is it a fire moon? Is it a water moon? Earth or air, right? And you can think, if you know your astrology chart, you could look and see where that sign is in your chart and kind of see what area of life is being activated. And you can make specific intentions or hopes or prayers around that area if you like. And then, you know, revisiting that those hopes and prayers along the way. Sometimes I think the best practice is really to work with one intention per lunar cycle and really deepen with it. And kind of checking in each day. And then by the time you get to the full moon, you'll have some more information about that intention, about how you're going in your life regarding that. And you'll see what's working and what's not. And so any kind of releasing ceremony, celebration and releasing ceremony around the full moon. And, you know, even as simple as just going out and looking at the moon and letting the moonlight be on your body and acknowledging her presence, her light, her growth, your presence, your growth, your light, you know, it can be really beautiful, I think. So it's really, I'm a very kind of a rebel and an individualist. And, but I do think that there's just a general, you know, growth and release, build and release energy, wax and wane, that you can just tune into as a starting place if that feels good.
Mm-hmm. And most people know of astrology from their star signs in newspapers and magazines. And then also there are very stereotypical characteristics for most of the signs, and most people will identify with them either to their benefit or not as well. Mm-hmm. How mm-hmm. true are those stereotypes, and what can you gain from kind of buying into that or finding out what each sign really represents and whether that characteristic is you?
Beautiful question. I love that. They are stereotypes, right? So star sign or sun sign astrology is one facet of your being. It's where the sun was, which the sun spends about a month in a sign when you were born. There are so many other pieces. So that's really only one piece of your personality, first of all. So just to know that whether you totally identify with the stereotype or not, it's only one part of your being, and not to get too identified with it in that way. There's light aspects and shadow aspects to everything. So I think to really understand any part of your astrology chart is to understand the archetype of the sign and understand, you know, how that sign works in it for its highest energetic resonance, really, right? And then where it's working in the shadow, where it's working behind the scenes or to its own detriment, and how that plays out in you, you know. But there's, so, you know, the rising sign and the moon sign are also very important for like a overall kind of personality gauge, you know. Those three pieces are kind of a core triad in understanding yourself, because your solar nature is only that kind of one, like the shining, what, how the organizing principles moving through you, but your lunar nature is just as important. Mm-hmm. And your rising sign as well is really kind of almost sometimes the mask that people see more than your sun is your rising sign. So understanding all of those pieces, if you can, gives you a fuller understanding of yourself. Mm-hmm. But you change over time as well, even though you have innate wired patterns in. And so try not to get too fixated on identity around it all.
and from my point of view, being a Scorpio and kind of like waving the Scorpio flag, because we get such a bad rap that we kind of use the fact that we're a Scorpio to kind of be a little bit wicked and a little bit vengeful. And to an extent, a little bit smug as well, you know. You say if you're a Scorpio and you kind of leave the sentence just hanging there as well, as like,
right?
I'm a Scorpio, okay. Where's the question gone? What would you say were the core bits? You kind of said to know like your sign, your rising sign, and what about the elements and things like that?
Sorry to cut you off. I get excited. The elements are great to know, because that's going to give you another layer of your personality. Like, do you have a lot of water? in your chart, you know. For instance, I'm a Gemini sun, and Geminis get a bad rap too, actually. They're like, oh, Geminis are two-faced. No, we're not two-faced. We're just, we can examine the polarities in life. And, but you know, it's mutable, moving, changing air, right? But my rising sign is Cancer, which is water, and my moon is in Pisces, which is water. So there's a lot of water element in me, even though if you only knew I was a Gemini, you'd be like, wait a minute, you know, that doesn't make sense. Like all this like emotional and like feeling and all this stuff, like, why aren't you just in your head? Because you're an air sign, right? It's a, so understanding the elements is really important, I think, and just seeing how those elements work together. Like how, what happens when fire and water come together, right? Create steam and like, you know, so you kind of get these ideas of how, if you have a fire sun and a water moon, or a fire moon and a water sun, like how is that going to create you, your expression of energy through you? So it's different for everybody.
Good. And if you then start to understand a little bit about the signs, and you kind of know that you've got like water and fire here, and then say you meet a partner that maybe you want to enter into a friendship or a relationship with, how much should you really look into that when you're thinking about whether there's going to, what you're going to get out of that relationship, whether it's going to be a calming relationship or compatible or fiery, or how can you, or should you just kind of let things be, or, you know?
Well, I think we should feel your way into it, but that's water energy saying feel your way into it. But like what you can do is if you have your natal chart, like your birth time, place and all that, so you actually have that natal chart and you can get that of the person that you're in partnership with, you can compare those charts together in a synastry and look at how the different planets and whatnot interact with each other. And you can get some idea of patterns and even length of time, or, you know what I mean? Longevity kind of thing. And of course, like looking to the bigger transits of what's happening right now will also give you information about the things that you're encountering in your life. So if your seventh house, which is a house of relationship, is getting a transit by Venus, maybe there's, you know, a new love interest is going to come into your life. But is it going to be long lasting? You know, that might, you can't, it, just because Venus is moving through your seventh house doesn't mean that it's going to last forever. Do you know what I mean? So there's all kinds of ways to look at it, but I think you just live your life and you feel into it. And if you find yourself being drawn into bad habit, bad patterns with somebody, then you know they're not good for you. And if you can look at the chart to prove it, but you know, sometimes you see some karmic stuff with certain relationships, you know, some nodal connections that really speak to old past life kind of interactions for people who think about those kinds of things. So sometimes it's good and sometimes it's something to steer clear of, really depending on what that frequency is, right?
And how does astrology lean into the society at large, or like cities, or the times that we're in? And just saying, like, at the moment we're hearing so much more about we're moving into an Aquarian age, and we're coming out of Piscean age, or cities that, you know, that times businesses are established at certain points, and do they in themselves have an astrological?
Oh yeah, yes, everything can have a chart. Yeah. You can make a chart for anything. Yes, so the age of Pisces and ages of Aquarius, that is a very, that's connected to something called the precession of the equinoxes, and that's like a 2000 year cycle. That is kind of, it's difficult for me to really explain it technically, but know that we are in a transition time for sure in between these ages, which is why there's a lot of distress, because you're moving from one kind of consciousness into a new kind of consciousness. And there's kind of, it's like, it's a portal, and it's, you know, there's a lot of wobbling going on and a lot of changing of the energy. So we see all this expansion, but we also see all of this like old kind of corruption and stuff as well, kind of side by side, because things are shifting really quickly. So that's the age of Aquarius, age of Pisces, kind of in a nutshell, really simple kind of nutshell. But as far as society, like, I mean, definitely like following the moon can give you an idea of overall energy on a day-to-day basis, because the moon moves really quickly through the chart. The moon changes signs every 2.5 days. So it goes through the entire zodiac during a lunar cycle. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of get the general mood state by following the moon. But the outer planets, even all the way from like Jupiter, Saturn, and then the outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, they move very slowly because they're so far from the sun. So they tend to have a bigger impact on the collective and in generational things, you know, like Jupiter just moved into Scorpio. It's going to be there for about 13 months. Mm. So that's a long time, right? And, you know, Pluto moved into Capricorn in 2008. It's going to be there till like 2024. That's a really long time. So there's, you know, that's going to impact the collective in a really big way, more so than, you know, Mercury and Mars and Venus. They all move more quickly. So they're short term. So very short term would be the moon, kind of emotional feeling state of the energy of the day, maybe what you're going to see in people. And then bigger picture, longer periods of cycles of time, and then how those outer planets interact with each other. You know, in the 60s, in the 1967, 66 to 68, Pluto and Uranus were conjunct. They came into this conjunction that was created a very revolutionary state. You know, Uranus is like sudden change, is an innovation, and Pluto is death and rebirth and power. And those two energies came together and birthed something, right, in the collective. So just as one example of how you can see that, there's a great book called Cosmos and Psyche by Richard Ternus that talks all about these bigger collective cycles of planetary movement on culture, which is pretty interesting for folks who might want to check that out.
That sounds like a really good one. And I for one, as a Scorpio, I'm very interested to find out what Jupiter's going to do for me in the next as well. I don't know. With the absence of it, with the reemergence of it, we'll see. It from what I can see coming in, you know, reading things and listening to reports, it sounds like it's going to be a good thing. So I'm all open for like riding that new energy anyway. So
beautiful.
Another thing that I wanted to ask you is, every now and again when we hear the word retrograde, and everyone goes into a little bit of a panic about the retrograde, and you know, don't buy it, don't turn your computer on, or don't travel. What does it really mean when there's a retrograde, and should we be kind of like in panic state about it, or should we be more cautious about the decisions we make if we're making like kind of bigger decisions?
Certainly, good question. Mercury retrograde is very much in the collective now. It's very much like people talk about it a lot. Mercury does go retrograde 3 or 4 times a year, so it happens pretty frequently. What it means that from our point of view on planet Earth, it looks like the planet is going backwards. Physically, technically, it's an optical illusion, but it does move backwards in the chart. So it does impact the energy, because There's a slowing down. When a retrograde, a planet looks slowing down in the zodiac, stopping, moving backwards over ground that it just covered. So there's a review period going on, a restructure, a reorienting, stopping, and then moving forward again. So definitely the most intense times of a retrograde are actually when the planet is stationing to stop or to move forward, because the especially Mercury moves very quickly. It's the quickest moving planet. The moon's not really a planet, so we don't, you know, it's a luminary. So we notice its energy. So when Mercury is slow or at a standstill, that's the worst time in a retrograde. So definitely, if you can avoid, you know, signing a contract or buying a new iPhone or things like that on those days, that's great. But life happens. And so you cannot live in a panic about retrograde. You just have to like be more intentional, like read the fine lines before you sign it, you know, and if you have to buy new technology, like just sage it every day for a while, or, you know, do something, back up your, you know, your computers and do these things, but don't panic and don't freak out. And I think that having the mindset of like things might take a little more time during a Mercury retrograde, and just giving yourself a little more time and space. Because we live in such an accelerated time that we are so used to having everything happen in an instant that when it doesn't, we kind of go berserk. People get really frustrated. So, you know, do yourself a favor and just just prepare and relax, but don't freak out too much. I mean, it impacts different people more depending on, like, if you have a strong Mercury chart, it might impact you more, or if it's transiting a certain part of your chart that has a certain planet or whatever, you might be having a harder time. But all the planets go retrograde. Venus every couple of years, Mars every couple of years. The outer planets all go retrograde every year for about 5 months, right? So there's a lot of review opportunities, but you know, if you were afraid of retrogrades, you'd be kind of frozen, not doing anything. So we're always in like review. It's like the moon, right? We grow, we go, we release, we're reviewing, we're moving forward.
You know, it's like the social media memes that go up as well. It's just like, you know, don't blame me, blame the retrograde.
Yeah,
well. Go out and commit like the most ridiculous things and just blame it on outside forces.
Anything to shirk responsibility, right?
So
Mercury made me do it. No.
Yeah. And then it's like, it's over now. I'm like, don't blame me for anything that happened when Mercury is in retrograde.
I don't buy it.
No.
It's like the stereotyping that you spoke of earlier. It's stereotyping and energetic and it's, you know, sensationalism sells. Mm. And gets attention. More articles are going to read it if you tell them something terrible, right? Something. I mean, it's like people are drawn to it, like an accident on the side of the road. People want to look.
I know. Why are we like this? I don't know. Anyway, talking about energy, and again, seeing more and more things as people are getting more aware of the different terminology, is the terminology of the empath. Mm-hmm. And how, because you've done a lot of empathic counseling, is that the way you term it? How some people become so overwhelmed with what is happening. How can those who feel that they are highly empathic shield themselves from what's going on? Because some people are empathic to the point of they are crippled in their energy. They can't get involved in the way that the world is at the moment. And if you can't deal with the way that the world is at the moment, you know, like you say, we're going through so much change. There's a lot that's happening and it ain't great. Mm-hmm. So it's like, how do you shield yourself if you feel that you are highly empathic? How do you get someone to kind of build themselves up and create boundaries so that they're not overwhelmed by everything that's happening?
Yeah. Yes, it's such a hot word. You know, I actually, as somebody who's very sensitive and empathic, I have a hard time with that. I had a hard time with that word. I choose the word, the conscious empath, in this counseling and this program that I've done, because it really is like, I decided that I wasn't going to be a victim of my sensitivities anymore. And I wasn't going to be, that wasn't going to run my life in a destructive way. And that started with me having to like take responsibility for my energy system. And, you know, my energy system was very disorganized. I didn't have good boundaries, energetic boundaries. I don't mean I wasn't able to say no. And I don't mean about like having to hide behind walls. I mean, just knowing what was mine and what wasn't mine. Because a lot of folks who are very sensitive just merge. They pull in all of this energy. So learning how to work with your energy system, basic energetic hygiene, like grounding and clearing your field every day, multiple times a day, to start to understand what it feels like to be grounded, what it feels like to be you in your own space. Things like cord cutting and filling energy leaks and all kinds of things can be done, but it's really, you know, taking responsibility for your own energy system. Mm. And doing the practices, the very practical practices that help. Kundalini yoga is kind of how I do it now. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, it was something that came into my life after I'd already started working with energy, doing different healing work and things like that, and created the conscious empath. But now those technologies help me keep my field clear and to create a strong magnetic field that I feel, I don't pull everything in anymore, you know? So one thing I've noticed though is it's really kind of hard to break away from some of those. They become habits and patterns, and people can get very addicted to feeling everything and feel very lost. You're trying to find yourself when you're used to feeling everybody else's feelings is not an easy task, and it can be very scary and very overwhelming, and a lot easier to just keep staying overwhelmed. Again, like, I'm going to blame my empathicness, like I'm going to blame Mercury, rather than trying to become empowered and conscious and intentional about how you run your energy. And I mean, turn off the news, you know, give yourself some space to, you know, you don't have to disconnect, but you can have boundaries. Mm. You can turn things off. You can walk away. You can say no. You can ground and clear your field when you go into a situation where you're going to feel overwhelmed. You can go in the bathroom 10 times during that meeting or that party and go do it again and again and again to keep grounding and clearing yourself, you know, so that you can show up and actually take up your own space and be present and be of more compassion. Actually comes from that place, because it's not like emerging kind of compassion, but it's being able to hold space and help people from a strong center.
And what form does your work take when you're working with that? Is that what you would be doing with somebody if they were coming to you for that kind of counseling?
So I have a session of a series of sessions that I do called the Conscious Empath Sessions that are based on a program that I taught many times. So it is a series of things where it's like basic, you know, conversations that are happening about them and their life. So if we can get a understanding of what they're dealing with on a personal level. Mm-hmm. But yeah, teaching really basic energy hygiene, grounding, clearing, working with cutting cords, filling energy leaks, different tools and techniques so that they can come up with their own practice, that one that's longer, that they can like spend a lot of time with and really kind of like, you know, like a 31-minute meditation where you have the time, but then something also quick that they can do when they're out in the world, you know, that you don't have to necessarily have sage with you to clear space, although that's lovely. But how can you do that on your own when you're like in the store and you just got sludged by some, you know, strange person who just projected some weirdness on you and you're like, ah, like what can you do in that moment? Right? How can you clear your field? And you can, you know, and connecting, helping folks connect with their own inner guidance and their guides and things like that. So they know they're not alone. Mm. Also, you know, that you have a lot of support in the fifth dimension when you start to tune in and ask for it. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And questions that I want to ask everyone, what woman would you say gave you the best piece of advice ever?
Probably a teacher that I worked with for a while, who I also did like personal sessions with. She created a system called Depth Hypnosis. Her name is Isa Gucciardi. And she's a deeply compassionate, fiercely compassionate woman. And she's also no bullshit, right? She really helped me. She just gave me good advice about compassion, kind of like a teaching around understanding what true compassion is versus this kind of Tibetan Buddhist idea of idiot compassion, which I don't know if you've heard of that term before, which is that kind of what I was speaking to of that like merging compassion, where I think she gave an example of like, you know, you're walking along with a kid with an ice cream cone and their ice cream cone falls on the ground and they start to burst into tears. Do you sit on the ground and cry with them?
Right.
Right. No, that's idiot compassion, right? You know, you hold space for them. You help them understand their feelings. You like be with them and give them compassion, but it's not emerging, right? And I think that as somebody who's very sensitive and very compassionate, to understand that I didn't have to like feel it all and get involved in it all. And it was the starting of like, you know, creating boundaries and owning my field. And she helped me with that a lot. And just really understanding the nature of compassion. Is pretty fundamental. She gave me a lot of deep teachings, but that one sticks in my mind a lot as someone who feels very, very deeply.
I like that. I like that idiot compassion one. I think there's a lot of guilt sometimes that you feel when people want help and but they want you to come and sit in the trenches with them so that, you know, you can't help anyone from that position. And sometimes you have to go away and make yourself stronger and kind of guide them out of it and just show that there's something better. But I wish I'd known that phrase like years ago. It would have helped me out in such a way. Like, okay.
Yeah, there's a beautiful article. I'll send you a link to an article about idiot compassion as well. Yeah, it's really, It's helpful. It's helpful.
It's totally helpful. And it could help so many people, but that's really, I like that one. That's really good. And which female do you think represents higher energetic resonance?
That is such a tricky question. You know, this person who's just coming into my mind today, and it might change tomorrow, and it's probably different yesterday, is there's a yoga teacher whose name is Elena Brower. Mm-hmm. And she's very tuned in. Like, she has this way of speaking and teaching that she really, it feels like a very clear, fluid channel. And it's very graceful, and it's filled with beauty and compassion and depth and truth. And I like her voice. I've done yoga practices on CDs and whatnot with her voice and her guidance for years. And she really does have that quality, I would say. There's so many amazing women teachers that we're graced with right now. But she's just one I would speak of. Yeah.
That's perfect. And what would you say was your favorite self-care ritual, your favorite practice right now that's really helping you move forward in the way that you want to in your life?
I do love I love essential oils. Like, I'm very scent-oriented person, so I like oil in general, like oiling my body, and I like essential oils. So I like to bring moisture to my skin, and I love to adorn myself with scents that uplift my spirits or calm me, or, you know, whatever I need, because the plant, I'm very, really into plants and plant healing, you know, essential oils and herbs and things like that. And they're very, nowadays, you know, as long as you get a good quality oil, they're very beneficial and accessible for people to use. And I mean, rose oil and the smell of roses got me through one of the hardest winters of seasonal depression. Was one of the key things that I was doing as self-care, was to put rose lotion on every day, and just, you know, also flower elixirs, like flower plants. Plants are deeply healing in many forms. So that's a big self-care for me. And then I do like to oil my body, lotion and oils, and like, just as I'm drying, I mean, I'm 50 now, so like, my, you know, things are changing, and I think that there's a way that I'm not going to stay dewy like I was in my 20s, but there is a way that I can bring more moisture and more nourishment and more yin energy to myself, you know, through hydration and, you know, external oleation both.
Mm-hmm. How are you getting on with cold showers? Just a question.
You know, cold showers are interesting. They're very activating. I do kind of love them. I don't really take hot showers anymore, but I have been taking hot baths lately because I live by the ocean and it's really chilly in the mornings. So there's something about a hot bath that I can't resist. But I don't like hot showers as much. They feel very, very like depleting to me. It's very strange. So, yeah. You know, the oiling beforehand does really help. And also something just funny is, we moved into a house that has a shower that is made for somebody very much shorter than me. So I can get in and out of this little tiny shower jet much easier. So I don't stand in there like all of a sudden cold is everywhere on top of me. So I manage it little bits at a time. And it actually does. You are warmer after a cold shower than you are after a hot shower. It's very strange.
It took me a moment to kind of get into the idea of it. And then I think I just kind of found enough like supporting evidence of it's going to work this way, and just started, you know, oil before, then started working up the body with it. And then I remember at one point just going in, going, this water doesn't actually feel cold.
Exactly.
Isn't that bizarre? You'd be like, okay, it's like, I know that I've got cold water on my body, but it doesn't feel like cold water. And I'd spent so long resisting the whole idea of it. And then you come out and you do, it's almost, when you're doing it, doesn't it feel like you're drinking coffee? That's the only thing that
it activates you. It's like, ooh,
caffeinated drinks as well. And it's one of those things that you can't really explain to anyone, because, and when I do have warmer showers, I can't go hot anymore. I mm-hmm. recently went to a hotel once, and for some reason I couldn't get a cold shower. It was cold, and I was just like, well, this water's too warm. It's bizarre, isn't it?
How it, yeah, it is strange.
Like, isn't it curious how your mind goes? But yeah, cold showers have really, I try and point it out to everyone, like it was pointed out to me, and everyone's like, sure, no.
But because your mind gets in the way. You have to try it. You just have to try it. Also, it makes you more able to go into natural bodies of water, like going into the ocean. I mean, I am in the Central Coast now, so it's warmer than it was where I was before. But I see other people like going like this, and I'm just like, you just go into the water. I'm like, it's not that cold.
No, I'm great.
Yeah. It's
one of those things. And your skin looks so much better as a result.
It really does.
I would recommend it to anybody.
I concur. Try it, ladies.
Yeah, do it. Just cold showers. Honestly, it really does work. So, moving on. What is next in your projects? What's next in your life? What are your future plans?
So, I'm kind of percolating and envisioning a new coaching kind of package using the moon and lunar cycle as a strategy for sessions every week with the lunar cycle and people's charts and like helping them in their lives strategically. So I am kind of looking into creating something around that. I'm also considering teaching more about astrology and kind of stepping into that a little bit and trying to figure out how I might do that. But these are just, it's the time of year for me to dream into projects. It's autumn and winter, and I don't think there'll be a lot of new offerings from me necessarily until the spring, but it's the time where I go into dreaming, envisioning, and creating. Mm. So that's exciting. I'm also doing a collaboration with Lotus Way, right, which is new. They make flower elixirs and really beautiful products with flower essences, and doing readings for them with their new flower deck and astrology. So that's new. I just like a new thing this week, and that's pretty fun. So
I remember seeing your Instagram with those cards. Actually, they're stunning.
Oh, they're so beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's fun. That's new. And just doing more readings. So I was doing a lot of transition this year. We sold our home and moved. I was traveling, and I'm finally grounded in a home, and I have a room and an office. And so like opening back up for sessions too, and just doing more one-on-one work. Like, I'm really excited to be doing more of that again.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
I'd be super interested in finding out about astrology in a way that's accessible, because I think it can be, if you really want to go into astrology and not just kind of pick up a magazine, there can be a lot, but I'd be interested in just finding out a little bit more about astrology that I can take on and kind of be more aware of what it all means, really. I just kind of cherry pick what people post on social media, but it'd be something that I'm sure not just me, but many people would be interested in. So we look forward to that for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I like to make astrology useful and practical that you can really embody and understand it, because it can get really technical and confusing really fast. So that's really important to me.
Because there seems to be just two ends of it, the kind of really like technical, complicated part, and then the magazine stuff. And there's got to be the bit that in the middle that we can all get something out of, that
absolutely
is readable, that's understandable, that takes the technique and just kind of breaks the science down for people that just want to know, like me, for myself on an everyday. Mm-hmm. So how can we further connect with you then? How can people find out about you, and also talk about your readings that you do, the downloads every month? You don't mention that.
Oh, so, and I do the lunar astrology reports. I actually do them. It's an audio, and I do four a lunar cycle. So a new moon, first quarter moon, full moon, and last quarter moon. And they're free on my website. It's an audio that you can just go listen to, or you can subscribe and get them to your inbox. And those are wonderful, because I do talk about the energetics of the lunar phase, and where the sun, moon is moving. And we'll speak to some other astrological aspects as well. I try not to get too overwhelming, but I try to make it like you could actually embody it and digest it and understand it and use it in your life. And that's the feedback that I get, is that's coming across. So I think those are helpful. I love doing them, and it's kind of like a seva in a sense to try to offer it. You know, it's just my gift to the collective is here's some astrology that maybe you can understand and use in your life. So that's fun. Those are the lunar astrology reports. You can find them on my website. Also on Instagram is a great place. I love Instagram. It's just my name, Christina Wingeyer. So if you like flowers and nature and astrology
and the moon and
the moon,
at the ocean from your.
If you like the ocean, I know I'm like ocean spam right now. I just moved. I'm across the street. I can see the ocean out of that window, and it's just such a treat. There's so much beauty and so many gifts that I receive every day, and I feel like it's like I'm asked to share it, you know, through this very humble Instagram. It's just a picture or a video, but there's a lot of beauty to share, and I think it's important to share the beauty, especially in these crazy, overwhelming, out of control times, is to ground into beauty, into nature, and the abundance that is, and the present moment is so important.
I get a lot from seeing what you're taking pictures of, and little crustacea and things that you can find. I love it. I think it's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, it feeds me anyway. So I live in London, so I don't see that stuff every day.
So I'm glad.
Yeah.
It makes me happy.
So that's it for today's conversation. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you very much, Christina, for coming on board, because obviously it's a new vision that I've had, and I've just reached out to the ladies and the women that I think have got something that can really offer to this as well, that we can then kind of have a safe space, a safe portal for those awakening women to listen to and to really get something out of it and find which are the tools they need for themselves to kind of just help them with their journey. So I just want to say thank you very much for coming on board with this as well, because it's unproven. All it is an idea and a feeling, and I really appreciate that you did this.
My pleasure, and I'm truly honored to be invited to have this conversation with you. It's such a beautiful project, and I'm excited to listen to the other interviews and see who else has, said yes to this invitation that you've put out. So thank you.
Thank you.
And then we have another episode. So since we recorded the conversation, Christina has actually launched her course. So if you're interested in learning about astrology, it's a 15-month course, and the link to signing up is in the show notes as well. And if you also want to get in contact with me directly, you can do so via my website, which is carolmaewhittick.com, carolmaewhittick.com. And you can reach out and reach me on all the other social medias as well. If you look out for me on Twitter and on Instagram, it's Kazmik, so CAZMICK. And just again, want to say thank you for seeing us through another episode. Don't forget to click subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to so that you can get the newest episode the minute that it gets uploaded. Also, if you're enjoying this, please feel free to share the love with anyone who you think within your friend circle who would be interested in hearing and getting involved in her conversations. And looking forward to bringing a new episode to you next week. It's an extra special one, slight departure from the format, but full of value, I'm sure. So enjoy your week, and until next time, take care. Thank you.